Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market, a dynamic leader in the quality food business, a mission-driven company that aims to set the standards of excellence for food retailers. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Phil Colicchio, and you're listening to The Business of the Business, broadcasting here at the Heritage Radio Network. We're located in beautiful Bushwick, Brooklyn, and we're here at Roberta's. We air 5 o'clock on Wednesdays, and if you're a consistent listener, and I hope you are, you already know that if you miss this broadcast live, you can hear it as a podcast on iTunes. Or you can log on to www.heritageradionetwork.org, click on to the Business of the Business icon, and go to the archive and listen to it. And I hope you do. I actually I get a couple of calls from people who archive it and allegedly enjoy it. Okay, let's get down to business. Recently, we devoted a show to the theme of structure. The importance of building a strong foundation for a hospitality business, whether it be a restaurant, a hotel, or sort of a consulting type of business. Today, the topic is balance, striking the right chord, being able to responsibly engage and manage multiple demands on one's time while staying true to oneself and one's goal. My guest today is actually the essence of balance. Gavin Channon, a brilliant winemaker from Santa Barbara, California, began working in the wine industry as a teenager. He did it on a lark. He decided to do a little summer harvesting and enjoy the lifestyle and enjoyed what it brought to him. He seems to be balancing as part of his makeup. He balanced his college time and his enthusiasm for winemaking well enough to be a Phi Beta graduate, Phi Beta Kappa graduate of UCLA. He's balanced business with art. He's balanced his winemaking skills with business acumen in a relatively short amount of time. Gavin's been named one of Forbes magazine's 30 under 30. To watch in the hospitality business. And he even met his current business partner at an event called The Pursuit of Balance in the Wine Industry. Gavin is balanced on the edge of his chair right next to me right now. Gavin, welcome.
Phil, thanks for having me.
Oh, man, it's been a long time coming. I'm excited to have you in New York. Excited to have dinner tonight with you. We're doing a wine dinner at Colicchio & Sons. I'm told it's a pretty good restaurant.
That's what I've heard.
You ever hear of it?
A couple times.
Well, good. And I know that since they're smart enough to be purchasing your wine, I know you want to get over there and support. Okay. You are a kid. I mean, I'm just going to say it. You look young. You are a dynamic young guy. Is this a hard business? I mean, a physically demanding business?
Yeah, but it's fun.
Yeah, all right, good. Tell me about it.
And that's what I fell in love with, was the physical aspect of it. My first harvest, I was at the bottom. I was dragging hoses. I was cleaning.
Yeah.
I was dirty. And that's what I fell in love with. So that's what I love to do now. And I look at all the stuff I have to do on the administrative side, on the business side, as things I need to do to get dirty in the cellar.
You know what? That's... refreshing again. Always refreshing to sit down and talk with an entrepreneur, and an entrepreneur like you, that really has made it a point to be almost completely self-reliant. I know it didn't start that way, and I want to talk about how you currently, how you've conceived your business, how you're executing your business. But before I do, I'd be cheating our listeners if we didn't talk about your wine. So tell me about, before we get into any of the business, tell me about your wine. I know you brought some today. I've had the pleasure of enjoying Chardonnays that you produced and Pinot Noirs that you have produced. And you wouldn't be here if I didn't love them. But tell me about how you conceive your wine and your winemaking.
Yeah, so I started the company in 2007. I had worked 3 years in California at Aubon Climat Coupe. And then in 2007, I traveled. I worked in South Africa. I worked at two wineries in New Zealand, and then I drove all through France tasting and looking at vineyards. And when I got home after that long year, I made my first wine and started the business.
Wow.
And the focus was, after traveling, to make wines that reflect where they're from. And I love Santa Barbara. I think Santa Barbara's probably easily has the most potential for Pinot and Chardonnay outside of Burgundy. And I knew I wanted to make Pinot and Chardonnay because Pinot and Chardonnay show off where they're from
Wow.
naturally well. And I went after a style that at the time wasn't very popular, but it was a style that I loved. And
tell me, because the style, I know that the style of your wines, well, obviously the kick to the show was balance. And, mm-hmm. and that really is what your wines are about. Why go that route when it seems like the whole world for a long time just wanted to be punched in the face by big, fat wines?
Yeah, for me it was an easy choice. It probably shouldn't have been an easy choice in hindsight, but I wouldn't have started the company if I wasn't making what I love to drink.
Fair enough.
And just because the wines weren't in vogue, that didn't stop me. And 20 years from now, when these wines are out of vogue again, I'll still be making them.
No, you know what? I think they're personally, I think they're classically made. And I've enjoyed more than my share. You brought some today. What'd you bring us?
So I brought you the new wines from a new project that I started last year with a partner in Sonoma, Bill Price.
Nice.
And and the winery name is Lutum.
Ah, all right. So we're gonna jump right into the business. Lutum.
Lutum.
Spell it.
Lutum.
Do you have a website for it yet?
We don't.
Okay.
We actually came up with the name yesterday.
So breaking news here on the business of the business.
Yes, and Lutum is Latin for soil.
Yep.
And so much of what we do, and specifically what Bill and I are doing, is about these vineyards that we're working with. Hmm. So Channon Wine Company, which is my baby that I started in 07, is focused on single vineyard wines from Santa Barbara.
Right.
Lutum is a collaboration between Bill and I, and it involves Sonoma, Santa Rita, a lot of other sources. So
The wine in my glass is from?
This is from Santa Rita Hills in Santa Barbara. It's La Rinconada Vineyard right next door to Sanford and Benedict.
What should I be looking for when I put it to my lips?
Well, first off, it should taste good.
Tastes good.
But this was wine that was, this will be our first release. It was bottled in January. As you can see, it doesn't have a label on
it. I can see it has no label. It's bright in color. It is certainly not a dense flavoring. Again, subtle, balanced.
Mm-hmm.
You can taste the youth in it.
Mm-hmm.
Right out of the gate, which is I actually really love that.
Yeah, this is still a baby,
and you know it's for a project for a guy with 30 under 30 under his belt. Not a bad idea to start with something like that. I think you talked about a couple of you quickly named a couple of wineries, vineyards that you worked in California. You said Aubon Climat, and you said Coupe. I know that you spent several years working with two really great winemakers out there. Can
mm-hmm.
you tell me about the experience?
Yeah, I started, like I said, at the bottom as,
yep.
as a hose dragger.
Yeah.
I don't like
that. Should
term.
Be the name of a band, shouldn't it? Some
yeah.
of the hose draggers. All right.
You know.
Joe out there, what do you think? Hose dragger?
I always hated the word harvest mm-hmm. Or cellar rat.
Yeah.
I used to call myself a guest winemaker.
I like that.
But I worked there for 8 harvests, mm-hmm. starting when I was 18, leaving last year. And
is that how people count their years out there, by harvests?
Yeah, that's how I count
eight harvests. Yeah. Very nice. Okay.
I cheated working the off season in the Southern Hemisphere, so I got to add a couple up pretty quick. So this will be my 10th harvest in Santa Barbara this year, and my 13th overall.
That's incredible. I mean, that's that's very unique to find someone who knows what they want to do at such a tender age. But you're doing it now. The two winemakers that you worked with, mm-hmm. Jim Clendenin
and Bob Lindquist,
both I think brilliant winemakers. Mm-hmm. Sounded to me like you learned as much about business working there as you did about making wine.
Yeah, and a big portion of that was learning that side of things from people who started the business.
Yep.
With very little help and very little capital.
Right.
Which is kind of how I started my tiny project in 07.
Well, you know what? That's, again, back to being entrepreneurial in your thought and in your spirit. I also know, I know Jim a little bit, and I know that Jim did not start his vineyard as a hobby. He started mm-hmm. it as a business. And I think you mentioned to me, what did we find out in California? There are three types of wineries?
Yeah, I was saying the three types of wineries.
What are they?
There's a European style winery, which you inherit. There's a Napa style winery with a cave and a amount of money invested that will never come out.
Right.
And then there's a winery with a working budget and a normal business. And the only one I can ever be in is that third one.
That's good. That's good. You know, my dad.
The only one I ever want to be in is that third one.
Fair enough. Well, hopefully you'll make a fortune and you can be in all three at some point, right? But for right now, let's focus on what you're doing business wise. It's my understanding that in the industry you start as an intern, mm-hmm. you may make your way up to assistant winemaker, and then there's a ceiling, which either you either break through. Or maybe buy into the place where you're working. You chose to start out on your own. Why that route?
I think the main reason was I knew what I wanted to do. I knew what vineyards I wanted to work with. I knew what kind of wines I wanted to make, and I didn't have any hesitation about mm-hmm. it.
Did you have hesitation about how you were going to finance it?
Yeah.
Tell me about that, because that's a side of the of your business which is very romantic to 99% of the people out there, but there's a real hard edge reality facts. You're dealing, your office is Mother Nature, mm-hmm. Your boss is Mother Nature. You can't tell her what to do. You can only take what she gives you. Mm-hmm. But in order to even take any of what she gives you, you've got to be financially ready. What did it take to get ready?
Well, I was 20 at the time when I was planning it, and I kind of put together every cent I could, and borrowed a little bit of money from my parents and purchased grapes. So I didn't have there's no way I could have done a vineyard. Purchased grapes,
right?
Rented, borrowed, mm-hmm. stole.
What about equipment? You rented that?
Yeah. Right. So all of that.
Still, you're still renting it?
Well, now we moved into a permanent site, so now. Now we've gone to the next level, and
so that's a process. So you literally saved your money for 10 years. You didn't go to a financing source like a commercial bank or anything like that.
No.
Why?
No. Probably because they wouldn't give a painting student a sophomore painting student a loan.
I forgot to mention that Gavin graduated with a degree in fine art, and is an artist. Gavin, we're gonna get ready. We're gonna take a little break, sip a little more of your wine. When we come back on the business of the business, I want to talk about your new venture with Bill Price. I want to talk about the Shannon Wine Company, and I want to talk about how you're going to get from newly minted entrepreneur to exactly where the San Francisco Chronicle said you're going to be, which is really one of the great winemakers. In the United States within a very short amount of time. I know you're well on your way there. Phil Colicchio, Business of the Business, here on the Heritage Radio Network. We'll be right back after a short break with Gavin Shannon.
All of the times that we shared are breaking all the rules.
You're listening to When It Was Wrong by the California Honey Drops on the Heritage Radio Network.org.
Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Are you a locavore? Our Northeast regional forager for Whole Foods Market sure is. She spends her time traveling around the New York City metro area sourcing the best new or interesting artisanal and handcrafted local products for our purchasing teams at the local store level. Part of our commitment to our local suppliers includes assisting them with the process of getting their products sold at our stores. Whether it's suggesting packaging designs, pricing, or distribution methods, she's helping some of the area's best new products reach savvy shoppers at Whole Foods Market stores. Today, New York. Tomorrow, the world. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com.
All right. Thanks, Joe. And we are back after that that short break with Gavin Shannon of the Shannon Wine Company of Santa Barbara, California, here on the Business of the Business at the Heritage Radio Network. You know, Gavin, I really get taken with entrepreneurship, and particularly one where a guy saves his own money, says, I'm not going to go borrow money. There's enough pressure in starting a business. So I'm not going to get involved in that. And I'm in a high-risk business. You got to sell the product, right? I mean, you weren't born with a sales staff, right? How did you do it? I mean, you created this beautiful product. And by the way, I'm not the only one who says it's a beautiful product. The wine press out there loves it, and the consumers love it. The restaurants love it. But how does a guy get it sold? What did you do?
Yeah, so I took years studying how to make wine. I read every book I could. I traveled. I talked to everyone who would talk to me. So there's always challenges winemaking-wise, but I was confident with what I was doing in the cellar. I had no idea how to sell anything. I didn't talk to anyone about how to sell it. You know, I put on the cleanest clothes I had.
Oh, man.
I think the first time I went out, I probably put on a really ill-fitting sports coat. And
looking sharp today.
Yeah. Trying to clean up a little bit for New York.
Yeah.
I knocked on doors. And,
really?
And actually, I think a really good thing for me was I didn't know the unwritten rules of the industry.
There you go.
Which was great.
Yeah.
Because I could break all of them. And I was selling my first wines in January of 2009 during the
worst economic time in the United States in our lifetimes.
Mm-hmm.
Fair enough.
And I was honest and authentic, and I loved what I was doing, and I went and showed people the wines and talked to them. And
so you say people? What literally did you focus on a group of restaurants or
yeah?
Did you,
so
how, like when you said okay, I've got to have at least some game plan. Game plan was I got to get this wine into some good restaurants, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where'd you go? Who bought the wine first?
So my first customers were in L.A.
Ah,
and
that's where you grew up, right?
It was, yeah.
Good.
So my first customers were Kraft, Campanile, Spago. So my strategy was to find the best restaurants I could.
I like the strategy.
And sell them the wine. And they bought it. You know, it might have taken 15 or 20 phone calls, but they bought it. I would throw it in my car and deliver it.
What was that first tasting like when you showed up? I mean, were you sweating bullets? Were you?
Yeah.
It had to be nerve-wracking.
My parents still laugh now when I do sales trips and sell 20 or 30 or 40 cases and come home bummed out, because in those days, if I sold a case, we would come home and celebrate.
I'll bet, yeah.
And then I would go to San Francisco. I would drive to San Francisco with a car filled with wine. I would borrow my mom's SUV.
Smart.
And it would have 25 cases in it.
Hey.
And I'd sell those wines, and I'd get new orders, and I'd come up 2 weeks later and deliver it.
So you were the epitome of the chief cook and bottle washer. You did it. You made it. You bottled it. You slapped the label on it, which, by the way, they're beautiful labels, and your art is on each of the labels, which I find to be, again, very intimate. very in the spirit of your wine. And you literally knocked on doors and sold it and then delivered it.
Mm-hmm. And I think the key was the product. It was a real product. It was a product that I made, you know, with my hands that we grow.
Yep.
And then I was persistent. I didn't let all the no's slow me down.
There couldn't have been that many no's.
You know, my thing in the beginning was no's are rare. Yeah. There's a lot of maybes.
Right.
And
right.
Call me in a week.
Right.
And I would always call in a week.
That,
and so I used to say, I'm going to force you to say, I'm going to call you until you say no. And it might have taken a couple months, but most people did not say no.
So in the business, in your chosen ministry that you're in, which is also a business, which is also an art, which is also a craft, you move away from being your own salesman into distributorships and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I know we were chatting earlier, and you really made me laugh. Much like your first sale, where you were sweating, your first interaction with the distributor had to also be just as frightening.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us why.
Well, I think the most stressful one that we were talking about was Japan,
right?
Which is a great market for me now. It's tied with New York as my second strongest market. But and I'm planning on going out there next year.
Terrific.
But I was working with a company that a friend introduced me to. I never met him. I didn't know where the wine was going.
And you ship it before they pay you.
Yeah, they pick it up. So you get it ready and they pick it up.
And that's the, you know, I mean, the classic UCC stuff for lawyers, you know, which is that, all right, you're paid. But I mean, that wine went on a ship.
Mm-hmm.
And you might never see it again. You might never see the money again. How much was shipped?
Well, it was funny. I never told them this, but... you know, I told them we don't have a lot of wine. The wines were selling really well at that point, mm-hmm. but I really want to get into the market. Maybe we can start with a small order. And most distributors love to hear that.
Right.
They don't want someone to say, hey, I've got a ton of wine.
Right.
I need you to take 2 truckloads.
Right.
So they go, yeah, that sounds good. Let's do that. We'll put in a small PO. And they put in the biggest PO I ever had.
Oh, my God.
So...
Now you're really nervous.
Yeah, so I scraped to put that together just to find the wine, and they've been great partners ever since.
That's dynamite. And you tell me a funny story also about the part of being the entrepreneur, where you are making those phone calls to get paid
mm-hmm.
by those restaurants. You know, you threatened a lawsuit already. I mean, I thought to myself, wow, this guy really has done it all before 30. I'm pretty impressed with that.
Well, I'm a nice guy. That took almost 9 months to get the harsh talk out of me.
Well, you know what? I'm glad you had that experience. Now, on the next side of things, obviously, huge competition in your business, and I know that you can differentiate yourself with your region, with the type of wine that you make. You also differentiate yourself with pricing. Why is it important for someone who is your size, you know, as a sole proprietorship right now, to price his wines appropriately?
Well, I mean, this kind of wraps around to a bigger story, but I want to make, and when I started, the idea was to make a zero compromise wine, to make the best wine possible, to try to make the greatest California wine of all time. That's the goal at the end of the tunnel.
That's a great goal.
And to do that, you need great grapes. You need great equipment and supplies and barrels and corks, and all that's expensive.
Yeah.
So the wine has to be a certain price. And I also want to be small.
Right.
I don't want a huge winery. And to make a business work, selling cheaper wine, you need to make a lot of it.
Yeah, I think of things from a retail standpoint because I don't make the wine and I don't sell it. But so as a, you can't have a wine that sells at a retail price point of $12 and stay in business, right? Talking about you.
Yeah, no, not at my scale.
Right.
And the amazing thing about California is, I don't think there's any other wine. New World wine area that's quite like this, but you can make 6 barrels of wine and have an impact on the California wine scene.
Wow. I never thought about it that way.
And to me, that's really exciting because that means anyone with a small amount of space and a small amount of money can put their heart into something and make something that has an impact on the industry. You know, in Australia, you can't do that. It's huge players, and, right. and a lot of the world's like that. So I've always wanted to be small enough to touch everything, to smell everything, to
right.
and that's where the passion is. So to find a business that fits working in that way is what I want to do.
So that's some compartmentalizing because your partnership, which mm-hmm. I want to talk about, it has different aspirations, right?
Well, size wise, it's the same.
Ah,
and production wise, you know how we make things mm-hmm. is the same. It's the same, no compromise type of attitude. And that's important. A big thing about Ludum and working with Bill Price is having collaborators.
Interesting. Interesting.
And that was something that I didn't realize how great that was until I had it. And Bill's amazing. And then he has an amazing team of people. And being able to work with them, it's like an education.
And really, working, as you say, as a partner and a collaborator is much different than working for someone and executing someone else's vision.
Mm-hmm.
I do understand and appreciate that. Tell us about Bill. What did Bill bring to the table that attracted you?
Well, I think so Bill and I met at In Pursuit of Balance in 2011.
Here in New York or in California?
In California, in San Francisco was the mm-hmm. first one. And him and I exchanged some emails afterwards, and late one night, I think I got an email from him saying, "Hey, do you want to make some Dorel Pinot?" Dorel being one of the most historic vineyards in Sonoma. So I was pretty quick with my answer, and we made a little bit of Dorel that year. We also made a little bit of Rinconada, which we're drinking now.
Ah.
So a little bit of Sonoma and a little bit of Santa Rita. And between then and 2012, it blossomed into a full-blown winery. And the excitement of it was that Bill's expertise is in Sonoma.
Mm-hmm. Explain the difference. I mean, we're in New York here. You know, Sonoma's terroir and the terroir of Santa Barbara, where you are.
Well, they have a lot of similarities. They're both coastally driven.
Mm-hmm.
Santa Barbara's a little cooler. I think you also have a different kind of aspect of people. The people growing grapes are different, which is kind of the forgotten
Yeah.
element at times.
Yeah.
But, and then the soils are totally different. So going back to the name, Ludum, the soil, the mm-hmm. thing that struck me about walking around Dorel, and I'd never seen this before, is just picking up these huge volcanic rocks.
Really?
And, yeah. Bill also, has Gap's Crown, which is, and I was telling him.
What is that?
Gap's Crown is an amazing vineyard in Sonoma, in the Petaluma Gap.
Mm-hmm.
And, I was telling him a theme in all these vineyards is rocks and the soil. And one thing about California is we have the perfect climate for Pinot and Chardonnay.
Yeah.
We have a huge growing season. It's cool. There's not a lot of rot. There's not a lot of rain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's almost no hail. The challenge is a lot of times we have boring soils.
Ah.
So what we really hunt out is these places like Dorel, San Fernando Benedict,
mm-hmm.
Bien Nacido, Gap's Crown. And so you combine that soil with the climate that we all have, and that's what makes a great site for us.
I mean, that is funny the way you express it. It's actually the earth is your partner too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you do have a partner in all of your businesses, right?
Yeah.
You know, you really do. So the Ludum component is not going to replace the Channon Wine Company.
No. So Channon Wine Company and Ludum share a winery.
Mm-hmm.
Share equipment and share the facility and then different sources, different different mm-hmm. general outlooks in terms of where the fruit's coming from,
mm-hmm.
but kind of the core component of the idea of making great wine is the same.
Fine, I've got Gavin Channon here on the Business of the Business on the Heritage Radio Network. I don't want to leave Roberta's without asking you where people can purchase your wine retail, and our broadcast is national, but we're in New York. Where can you find it in New York?
Retail wise, Zaki's is a great mm-hmm. great spot.
You can go there on Saturdays and enjoy the Scarsdale afternoon, or you can get it online there too, right?
Mm-hmm. And I believe their ship I believe they're shipped to almost every state,
yep,
if I'm not mistaken. And then on the West Coast, K&L is a great shop. Mm-hmm. And you can also buy directly from me if you look up chanandwine.com.
I'm going to put a plug in. There's a great salesperson at Zachy's that I know very well. And that's my daughter, Elizabeth Colicchio. And you can visit Zachy's online. And I encourage you to do so because tasting Gavin's wine is much more fun than even this fun chat we're having now. It's,
yep,
it's dynamite.
And Liz actually worked with us in 2010.
She
so
did.
You should call her and ask her ask her how we do it. And you can also call me if you can track down the old website. My cell phone number's on there.
You know what? Tell people. Well, I mean, you can give out your cell phone if you want to. I'm not going to do it, but your website is?
Well, website's chaninwine.com. It's chaninwine.com.
It's an education to go on the site, and the contact information is there, chaninwine.com.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thrilled that you made some time for me this afternoon here, Gavin. And I think what we ought to do is give you the full tilt Brooklyn experience and get out there and taste some of that pizza. What do you think?
Sounds good. Thanks
dynamite,
for having me.
Dynamite. You're very welcome. Gavin Channon, thanks for coming out today. We'll see you next week on the Business of the Business here on the Heritage Radio Network.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.